Good morning, and welcome to another in our series of mini shiurim on the book of Yehoshua. We are learning in the merit of the IDF, Israel's emergency services, the hostages, and the injured, and we are at the end of Perek Yud Zayin, chapter 17. We saw Ephraim receive their land, we saw Menashe receive their land, and then we saw the sons of Yosef complain to Yehoshua about their land. We had two different approaches to understand who exactly was complaining. The dominant approach, Rashi, Radak, Abarbanel, is that it's Menashe talking, and their objection essentially is you're distributing the land based on the number of people who left Egypt. But we grew greatly when we were in the Midbar, in the wilderness, which, you know, we discussed the numbers yesterday, and we saw that Menashe in the census in the first chapter in Bamidbar, which you're talking first 2 years in the desert, is 32,200. And you get to Bamidbar chapter 26, the end of the period in the desert, and they are 52,700. So that even though they're spreading across the Jordan, some are west of the Jordan, some are east of the Jordan, nonetheless, they say you're working with old numbers and it's simply insufficient. That was the first explanation. The other explanation, Ralbag's approach, is that when it says B'nei Yosef, the sons of Yosef, it means both. It means Menashe and Ephraim, and they are talking and complaining together. And the way Ralbag sees it is that when the text says, when they complain, we received one lot, they mean literally one portion. There was only one portion, and it was broken up among Menashe and Ephraim, and it was insufficient. So what is Yehoshua going to say back to them? Pasuk Tesvav, sentence 15. Vayomer Aleihem Yehoshua. Yehoshua said to them, Im Am Rav Ata, if there are so many of you, Alei Lecha Hayara, Uveresa Lecha Sham Be'eretz HaPrizi V'HaRefaim, go up to the forest and clear land for yourself in the land of the Prizi, the land of the Refaim, Ki Atz Lecha Har Ephraim, because Mount Ephraim is too tight a space for you. You can do it. There are so many of you, of course you can do it. And this is going to take care of your needs. Now, Radak, as well as Malbim, taking the view that it's just Menashe complaining, say that Yehoshua is saying to them, I don't have the ability to tamper with the area that you've been given. However, Ephraim has this mountain, we call it Har Ephraim, and they aren't able to take it. So what you should do, that meaning to conquer those who are there, Ephraim does not have the numbers that Menashe has. So why don't you go up on Har Ephraim, settle that land. Ephraim is going to be very happy because their forest is going to be cleared. And that way, you'll be taken care of, right? As opposed to if you take the view of Ralbag, that this was the complaint of Menashe and Ephraim together. So he's saying to Ephraim and Menashe, either way, you know, Mount Ephraim is a good place. It just has this forest on it. So go up to the forest on the mountain and clear it. And that way, you're going to be okay. That's what he says. Well, B'nai Yosef are not so happy. Vayomru B'nai Yosef, the sons of Yosef say, Lo yimatze lanu ha-har. The mountain is not such a great space. It's not a big enough space. And V'rechev barzel b'chol ha-kanani ha-yoshev be'eretz ha-emek la'asher b'beit sha'an b'noseh la'asher b'emek Yisrael. They say also the Canaanites, they've got chariots. They have iron chariots. We can't beat the Canaanim. Now, they mention chariots. You don't actually use chariots on mountains. That's not a thing. So what are they talking about when they say we're concerned about the chariots? So the Malbim says they're not saying we can't take the forest. They're saying we need the forest as a barrier against the Canaanites. In the event that we actually clear the forest and start living there, we are going to be vulnerable to attack by the Canaanim with these terrible machines of theirs, these chariots. So Yehoshua is conciliatory. He says to them, "Vayomer Yehoshua al Beit Yosef, La Ephraim v'le Menashe le'mor." Yehoshua says to Beit Yosef, and here he enumerates specifically Ephraim and Menashe, whether Menashe was complaining in the first place or not. Yehoshua is now addressing both of them, saying, "I'm Rav Ata." He says, "You're a lot of people. V'koach gadolach, you have a lot of strength. Lo yiyelecha goral echad, you will not have a single portion." What does that mean? So Mitzudas David says, he's saying, you're not going to have this one small portion you're worried about. You're going to have a superior portion because you're going to conquer everybody. That's not a conciliatory approach. That's a, yeah, I heard your complaint. I'm not interested. That's the way Mitzudas David frames it. However, the Malbim says, no. We already said yesterday that there are cities that Menashe receives that are actually in the land of Asher and Yisachar, right? We talked about those cities which show up in the war with Canaan under Devorah and Barak that we read about in the Haftarah last Shabbos, cities that will appear later on in Yoshiyahu's war against Mitzrayim, against Egypt, Tanakh, Megiddo, Yivlaam, those cities. So Malbim says, this is where Yoshua adds them to him. He says, you're not getting only one portion. I am going to give you more. Since there are so many of you, I can add to your lot. So you're going to take care of things in those cities. So you will have that. And he says in sentence 18, Ki har yeloch, you will have the mountain. Ki ya'ar hu uvereso, it's a forest right now and you'll clear it. Vayolocha totza osav, and you will have the area around it. Kisarishas Aknani, you're going to conquer the Kanani. Kirecha Barzello Kichazaku. And then you get the end of that sentence, and the end of the sentence is difficult. He says, you're going to conquer the Kanani because they have iron chariots and because they're strong. No, that was actually why we're not going to conquer it. Yoshua, you didn't get the point. What does that mean? So Mitzudas David says the word ki sometimes means despite. You'll conquer them despite their strength. But Rashi and Ralbag say no. What he's saying is, we need you to be the ones to do this. Because you have numbers, because you're the exact point that you made, you've grown so much, we need you to be the ones to conquer this land because they're too strong for any other Shevet. That's the way Rashi and Ralbag read the statement. Not you're going to conquer them despite their strength, but you're going to conquer them because they are strong, and therefore we need to rely on you. Last approach, Abarbanel, he says, Chazak who doesn't mean Canaan is Chazak, is strong. It means the mountain is strong. And what he's saying is, from a tactical perspective, you're going to be the ones to defeat the Canaanim because that mountain is a great position. Once you take the mountain, that's a good position to be fighting from, and therefore you will be able to overcome the chariots, which are not as useful in mountain fighting. That's the argument. Now, honestly, while that's a very interesting idea for Abarbanel to be presenting, that's not the way it actually goes. If you remember, for example, that war that Barak and Deborah fight against Canaan, the Jews have trouble because they're in the mountains and they can't get to the low-lying areas in between them and to go from place to place. And it comes up elsewhere in Tanakh. Fighting from a mountain position is not always to your advantage. You might think it is because it's the high ground, but it doesn't always work out that way in Tanakh. Nonetheless, that's the way Abarbanel answers it. So three ways to take the statement of you will conquer them because it is strong or because they are strong. Either you will conquer them despite their strength, it's not because, it's despite, or you will conquer them because it's got to be you because they're too strong for anybody else, or you'll conquer them because you're going to hold the mountain and that's a strong position. Abarbanel notes that that's the end of the conversation. That's it. Chapter's over. Menashe does not answer. Either they're satisfied, or they just see they're not going to get their way, but the story moves on. And not only does it move on, but it seems to change scene altogether to a gathering at Shiloh. And that's going to be the beginning of Perek Yudches, chapter 18. Vayikalu kol hadas b'nei Yisrael Shiloh. All the Jews gathered to Shiloh, and they set up the Mishkan in Shiloh. When is this happening? At what stage is this happening? So the Gemara in Zvachim, Kuf Yud Ches Amud Beis, 118b, and Rashi, Radak brings it on our perek, Abarbanel brings it on our perek as well. The answer is, this is after the 14 years of fighting battles and dividing up the land, or getting to the end of the division of the land. That's what we're talking about. Not only that, but it's also the moment when they will finally move the Mishkan from Gilgal to Shiloh. This is a major milestone for the Jews. And here we get something very interesting. Take a look carefully at the pasuk. Vayikalu kol hadas b'nei Yisrael Shiloh. All of the Jews gather to Shiloh. Vayashkinu sham es ohel moed. And they set up the ohel moed, meaning the Mishkan, there. V'ha'aretz nichbesha lifneihem, and the land was conquered before them. And then it's going to go on to say, and there are still seven tribes who need their portions, and here's how they get their portions. What's missing? Like, any sort of ceremony for the dedication of the Mishkan in Shiloh? Right? You dedicated the Mishkan in the Midbar, in the wilderness, with, you know, a lot of fanfare and 12 days of gifts being brought by the different Nisim and so on. You get to the Beis HaMikdash and you have a 14-day celebration, 7 days and 7 days and a whole thing. And it goes over Yom Kippur and maybe overrides Yom Kippur in certain ways in Malachim Aleph chapters 8, 9, 10. You have a lot going on there in the celebration dedicated to Beis HaMikdash. Nothing when it comes to Shiloh. Now, maybe that's because Shiloh just doesn't rank. But take a look at the Gemara in Zvachim Kufir Chasam Adbeis, which says, Yimei Ohol Moed Sheba Midbar Arboim Shana Chaser Achas. You want to know how long the Mishkan stood in the Midbar in the wilderness? 39 years. Yimei Ohol Moed Sheba Gilgal Arba Asrei. 14 years in Gilgal. Sheba Shekivshu, Sheba Shechilku, 7 years of war, then 7 years of dividing up the land, which, as we've discussed previously. Yimei Ohol Moed Sheba Nov V'Givon Chamishim B'Sheva. 57 years, it will be in Nov and Givon after Shiloh. That leaves 369 years that it is in Shiloh, dwarfing any other period for the Mishkan, and frankly getting close to the 420 years that we credit for the second Beis HaMikdash, 410 for the first, 420 for the second. How you get those numbers is another discussion. But the point is, the Mishkan is there for a very long time in Shiloh. How do they get 369 years? What's that from? So the Pasuk in Malachim Aleph, Perek Hei Pasuk Vav, Chapter 5, Sentence 6 in Malachim, tells us that there are 480 years from the time the Jews get out of Egypt until the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara here is simply doing subtraction. Knocks out the years in the Midbar, knocks out the years when the Ohol Moed is in Gilgal, knocks out the years of Nov and Givon, and says, okay, we have 369 years left. That's the way that the Gemara does the math. There are certain questions you could ask about pieces of it, but that's the basics of Zvachim Kuf Yud Ches Amud Beis. So it's there for 369 years, and not only that, it is considered a serious permanent space. If you look at Zvachim Kuf Yud Ches Amud Aleph, Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba quotes Rabbi Yochanan to say, you know, when Chana brings Shmuel, her son, to the Mishkan, it says she brought him Beis Hashem to the house of God in Shiloh. The Mishkan is called the house of God. Then the Gemara quotes Tehillim Ayin Ches, Tehillim chapter 78. And there it calls it Mishkan Shiloh, Ohel Shikain Ba'adam. The Mishkan in Shiloh, the tent that God established. An Ohel is usually understood to be a less permanent structure. And then one more pasuk also in that same parak in Tehillim, Vayim As Ba'ohel Yosef, God rejected the Ohel of Yosef. So is it a house? The house of God in Shiloh, like in Chana's story, or is it an ohel, which sounds more like a tent, less permanent? So the Gemara's resolution is that there was no roof. There were stone walls, though. There were stone walls, avanim milamatan, and then curtains over the stone walls. So it had aspects of house and aspects of curtain. But what I'm focusing on is that it has stone walls. This is a very serious building. There's an element of permanence to it, which affects its halachic status, in fact. It is considered to be a permanent structure in halacha. If you take a look at Zvachim, the Mishnayos, in Zvachim, in the 14th parak, specifically Kuf Yud Beis, Amud Beis, 112b in the Gemara, you find out that when the Mishkan was in Shiloh, was in Gilgal first, the 14 years when they entered Israel, anybody could bring a karban anywhere they chose. Low-level karbanos could be brought anywhere. They arrive in Shiloh, no more private altars are permitted. Shiloh is destroyed, they're in Nov and Givon, private altars are permitted. In other words, the Mishkan has quasi-Beis HaMikdash standing. So why do we get this little tiny section here, and that's it? This practically invisible dedication. So I think it's two things. Number one, because this is, in the end, only temporary. That's the truth. The Mishkan is still a temporary site at this point, granted though it was temporary the first time also. And second, I think it's making a statement. even this place of the 369 years on the stone walls was not Makom Asher Yivchar, the place Hashem will choose. So we keep it temporary on purpose. We are waiting for the Beis HaMikdash. This is consistent. Well, you know what? There's more to say. Maybe we'll do that in the beginning tomorrow. Thanks.